On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to answer these questions. Is Giannis still the best player in the East, or is the Bucks roster holding him back from MVP conversations? Also, can Anthony Edwards' insane stretch of play push him into the MVP conversation? Will the full season stats hold him back? And more MVP discourse coming right up. Welcome, welcome, welcome to The Big Number. I'm Tom Haberstroh, and as always, we are here every Thursday at Yahoo Sports. I'm here with Dan Devine. Dan, what's going on, man?
Tom, I'm enjoying myself. I hope that your early onset March Madness has not left you too insane or furious, that you're operating at like a reasonable level or thrum of madness, because I personally feel like I'm vibing on the right frequency right now, and I'm ready to, you know, talk to you. I'm ready to put up some numbers, but I think we got something we got to do first before that.
Yeah, I'm making some brackets, and I've seen that you've already made a bracket. We're doing this at Yahoo Sports. If you guys think that you're listening right now, if you think you can beat us in on a bracket for March Madness, give us your best shot. Like, I'm fully aware that you might know nothing compared to me on the NBA, or at least you might think you have a lot on the NBA. I assure you that you definitely know a lot more about college basketball this year. So I don't know about you, Dan, but I don't know how your bracket making skills are. But if you want to do a bracket, join our Yahoo Sports bracket challenge, which is in the show notes below this video. Join up. The sign up link is there in the episode notes on YouTube or on your podcast app. So, Dan, have you filled out your bracket yet?
I have. I'm a company man. I'm a good worker bee. So I filled out my brackets for the men's tournament challenge and the women's tournament challenge. And I mean, I appreciate Tom sort of humble mouthing it and saying, like, you know, you probably know a lot more than me. I'm going to go out here and just stand on it. I don't think any of you know anything more than me about college basketball, irrespective of whether I know anything. So come try to defeat me. You will not prevail. And enjoy testing your might against the best that Yahoo Sports talent has to offer. Guys like me, Marcus Morris, everybody else, the rest of the Yahoo Sports talent team. And, you know, take your best shot. I'm going to tell you, you're going down because obviously we're experts. That's what we're here for.
Did you know Jimmer is in this?
Jimmer Fredette, the whole team, all of us are on the water cooler talking about our brackets and how we're going to bust your bracket busting style.
Well, listen, once everybody fills out your bracket, you're going to be watching the Milwaukee Bucks and Giannis Antetokounmpo, a whole new...
What seed are they? Are they in the 4-13?
Doc, he's a Marquette guy. Marquette's in it.
He is.
So I kind of feel like maybe Doc has Marquette going all the way. And same with Jimmy Butler, adult diapers. Watch out. Watch out. I almost made it. Yeah, I almost did it.
Oh, you know, your YouTube audience, you almost saw a spit take that would have been gross and weird, but we're not doing that. Milwaukee Bucks. Why did you bring them up, Tom Haberstroh?
Yeah, because this week's big number is plus 5.3. That is Giannis Antetokounmpo's estimated plus minus, his actual estimated plus minus, which ranks third among MVP candidates this season. You can find this metric, an all-in-one advanced metric that I love to use. You can find it at dunksandthrees.com. And this metric is important because number one is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Number two is Nikola Jokic. And then number three, the third best player this season, looking back on the season, has been Giannis Antetokounmpo when he's been on the floor. Shai is at plus 8.7. That's basically what is your production per 100 possessions above league average when you're on the floor? And Shai is at plus 8.7. Jokic is at 7.9. And Giannis is at plus 5.3. Just a shade above guys like Anthony Edwards and Jason Tatum and Donovan Mitchell, Jalen Brunson. We're going to talk about all of those candidates later in the show. But let's just for now focus on the Greek Freak. Dan, he is still very much awesome at basketball, a freight train in transition. Nobody can stop him when he gets downhill. That is still true. It was true when they won a title. It was true when he won those MVPs. It is still true to this day. And he's leading the entire league in and ones by like 25 and ones. He thinks he's got 74 and ones, and the next highest is something like 59. So it's not even close. Once you get a body on him, he can finish through that contact better than anybody else. He's leading the league also in transition points per game. He's leading the league also in points in the paint. He's just a monster. Okay. He's averaging 30 points per game, 12 rebounds, 6 assists on 59.9% shooting from the floor. And his on-court, off-court swing, when he's on the floor, the Milwaukee Bucks are 9.2 points every 100 possessions better than when he sits on the bench. And that swing right there, Dan, is why, in my opinion, he would get the edge over guys like Jason Tatum and Donovan Mitchell, who play on great teams, elite teams, but they're stacked. Top to bottom, they got so much depth on those teams, and you see it. Giannis's impact on his team is so vast that I think even though there's a huge minutes gap between Giannis and Jason Tatum and Donovan Mitchell, in particular, Jason Tatum has over 400 more minutes played than Giannis. I just think his on-court impact is so enormous that, like, for the Milwaukee Bucks without Giannis, they'd be nowhere. And with Giannis, they're probably in the running for a top three, top four team in the Eastern Conference. So to me, I'm going Giannis. I don't love all of these candidates in terms of, like, there's no clear-cut favorite here, but Giannis is third in EPM. He's third in PER. He's third in win shares per 48. He's third in BPM, NCAA, NIT. It doesn't matter. All those acronyms, Giannis is the next best guy after Jokic and Shea. What say you?
I love that we're talking about this. I wrote something about this topic a few weeks ago, which is basically like, why do we not talk about Giannis up near the top of that conversation anymore? In an age where Jokic has just sort of like blotted out the sun, and like for a couple of years there, Joel Embiid joined him, and now Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has joined him. There have been moments where Luka Doncic joined him in that conversation, and Giannis kind of, it's just like, oh yeah, he's number three, or he's also there. I would agree with you. I think if I was putting my ballot down today, Giannis would be third. And I honestly think you could probably make a better case that he's like closer to one than to five in the way that this all works. Like the basic fact of, like, I think we have become somewhat inured to just how remarkable and ludicrous he is, because the consistency, like, you just pencil in, like you just said, 30, 12 and six on 60% shooting. Like, oh yeah, that's just Giannis numbers. No one else in the history of the NBA has done that. And if you crack it down to 30, 10, and 5, and 55% shooting, so like he's clearing those bars pretty considerably. The only other player ever is like 1973 Kareem. Like, what we now come to expect as just the way that Giannis does stuff is a level that nobody in the history of the sport ever has. And he's just been doing that for 4 years now. And he comes back a little better each time. He's now a knockdown mid-range shooter, shooting like 48, 49% from mid-range. The passing gets better every year. The ability to not just sort of maraud your way through it, but also manipulate the chessboard. He's better at all that stuff than he used to be, while also still being the most terrifying weak side rotator in the league. And, you know, a guy capable of being the best defensive player on the floor, as Shai Gilgeous-Alexander learned in the NBA Cup final a few months ago. Like, all of that stuff is still there. And so I think the interesting question is, like, why isn't it at the front of our minds? Some of it, you know, the Bucks are 38-30 as we're recording this conversation today. So they're not fighting for the number one seed or a home court advantage throughout. They're fighting to stay in home court advantage, to, you know, maybe get the Duke in a Pacers rematch in the first round and avoid having to go start on the road. And the atrophy or the deterioration over years of what a title team was, this doesn't feel as much like a championship contender. And Giannis also hasn't been in the playoffs the last couple of seasons. So it's a little out of sight, out of mind in terms of like the top level of the sport. But none of that should, again, like, sap our ability to appreciate or be aware of just how insane this dude is and remains and continues to be. So I imagine, like, there's probably two ways of looking at this to get mad at us. One is from Bucks fans being like, you guys are idiots to not saying that he's not one or two. And one is everybody else saying, like, I mean, come on, a 38-35 seed? How is he getting all the way up to three? And the truth is probably somewhere in the middle, but wherever you land on that, the level of individual production, the level of efficiency, the volume of scoring, the two-way ceiling, all of it, and the carry job he's having to do with a roster that is no longer purpose-built for contention. Yeah, to me, it feels like he's number three at the worst. And then, you know, we're sort of negotiating beyond there. But that doesn't mean that it's like a no-brainer. There's still other guys with cases. It's just, you know, Giannis's case is pretty good to me.
Yeah, and also I should make note that after Tuesday night's disaster against the Golden State Warriors, this is probably not landing very well with a certain audience looking at Giannis's value.
Hey, everybody's having disasters against the Warriors right now. We just did a whole episode about it.
That's right. Go check out last week's big number about adult diapers, Jimmy Butler, and the defense that he's played. The leading the offense in that game on Tuesday night without Stephen Curry. If you want to know the value of that dude, Jimmy Butler, and his impact, check out last week's big number. The thing about Giannis in that game Tuesday night, I think it has more to do with how good Draymond Green is defensively than it is like any sort of slight on Giannis. Draymond was insane. When Draymond is locked in defensively, he said it after the game, like he's 1,000,000% thinks he deserves the Defensive Player of the Year. With that, like, send that reel in. Just send the reel of him guarding Giannis in that game, and he might just win Defensive Player of the Year just based on that performance. Just a masterpiece from Draymond. I'll also say this roster is not doing Giannis any favors. Giannis and Dame, Brooke Lopez, we got the first little action of like Brooke Lopez on the bench for crunch time and Kyle Kuzma at the four, Giannis at the five. Did it go so well against the Warriors? Not many things are going well when the opponent is that Golden State Warriors team. But this Milwaukee Bucks team, led by Doc Rivers, I think has underachieved a little bit this season, but I don't think that means that Giannis Antetokounmpo is not deserving of being the best player in the Eastern Conference this year. Collectively, Cleveland, better. Collectively, Boston, much better. I think that is okay to say those teams are better, but individually, Giannis, if you put that guy on those two teams, I mean, it's hard to argue that they wouldn't be better than their MVP candidate that's already in there. So I think for me, Giannis Antetokounmpo, with him just being so good in open transition, the way that he's defended, not necessarily the same shot blocker that he used to be or the rim protector that he used to be, that's okay. He's still one of the three best players in the NBA when he's dialed in. We'll get to more later in the show at the end about some of those warts on the Milwaukee Bucks and what we think about their postseason viability. But until then, let's focus on the other candidates here. Giannis Antetokounmpo, the third best player in the NBA by just about every metric, and may not be having the same caliber of season when we talk about the volume of minutes as the next guy we're going to talk about after this break. We're going to get into the four little numbers from Dan Devine. We're going to talk about them on four other candidates here after the break. All right, Dan, hit me with the first one of your little numbers here.
All right. First of our four little numbers this week is 12.5. That's how many games the Boston Celtics are ahead of the Milwaukee Bucks in the Eastern Conference standings, which brings us to your man, Jason Tatum, because that's not an individual statistic, but I have to imagine that there's some folks that would say that gap means you can't have Giannis that much ahead of Tatum in this conversation, especially considering just how good Tatum has been on his own. 27.1 points, 8.7 rebounds, 5.9 assists in 36.6 minutes per game, 45, 35, 81 shooting splits, career best assist and defensive rebounding rates. He leads the 50-win Celtics in touches, time of possession, points created by assist. He's guarding centers, as John Wall recently noted on NBA TV. Shouts out to John Wall, which allows Boston to switch pick and rolls with kind of no matter who's in the action, while also keeping a big guy back at the rim to keep that defense elite. He's sort of the do-everything player on the do-everything team. And as you mentioned, he's always there. 400-something more minutes than Giannis, has only missed a half dozen games. He's a constant and provides that, like, maybe not, if those guys are A-pluses, right? If you say Jokic and SGA and Giannis can be A-pluses. If Tatum's an A, but he's an A who's always there, that value, that's a sort of a, maybe a more tenuous thing to try to grasp, but that's a really interesting argument to me. He's also, you know, whatever shadow he might have had over his career in the past about can't win the big one, well, that's gone. He's a champion now. Everything that you could ask for Jason Tatum is there. Why? What's the argument for not getting him all the way up above there if you have like the totality of team success, minutes, individual scoring, what he allows that team to be, all those sorts of things? Where's the disconnect for Tatum getting up to that third spot?
You know, you mentioned that big number, or that little number, I should say, about the gap between, you know, the Celtics and the Bucks in the standings. But I would say probably even more impactful on Jason Tatum's MVP case is the Cleveland Cavaliers. Like, I feel like if the Boston Celtics were the number one seed, I think Jason Tatum would win third in MVP. I just think the reputation and the voting ballot. I think when you're looking at who's making those votes, what matters in the eyes and the minds and the hearts of voters, if Boston is in that number one seed, I'm guessing Jason Tatum is going to take that third slot. But because Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley and Kenny Atkinson and Jared Allen and Darius Garland and the Struce is loose, of course, the DeAndre Hunter acquisition, we talked about that on this podcast. Also, my guy who's... I don't even think he's qualifying for Sixth Man of the Year. But when we talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers, that they've kind of knocked down Jason Tatum's MVP case because of the fact that they're running away with the Eastern Conference. And Jason Tatum, he's having another amazing season. And he's got 2,307 minutes compared to Donovan Mitchell at 1,943 compared to Giannis, which is at 1,904. That's a huge lead, and that stuff should matter in the MVP conversation. But given that this Cleveland Cavaliers roster has been doing so well this season, I think that's kind of deadened the wind in the sails for Jason Tatum's MVP case. And yeah, it's just when you go all the way from Donovan Mitchell down to Ty Jerome and Dean Wade, this is just... The Cleveland Cavaliers have hurt his MVP case, and it's also because of this next guy on the list, right?
Well, yes, but quickly before we do that, it's worth noting, haven't had Kristaps Porzingis for about half the season. You're dealing with a lot more guys on reduced minutes. Tatum also gets, it's all setting up to where a guy can win an NBA championship, but he didn't win the finals MVP, so there's an underdog story. He wins a gold medal at the Olympics, but he doesn't play a lot, so there's an underdog story. And then he makes whatever this is going to be, like his sixth straight all-NBA first team, but there's going to be an underdog story. They have to stop getting away with this, the Celtics. It's getting to be preposterous. All right, whatever. The second little number this week, 31%. That is Donovan Mitchell's usage rate this season. Usage rate, if you're not familiar, measures what share of your team's offensive possessions you finish with either a shot attempt, drawing a foul, or committing a turnover. So this means that when Donovan Mitchell's on the floor, 31% of Cleveland's offensive plays end with him doing one of those three things. That's a lot. That is a top 10 rate in the league for the course of the full season, but it's also his lowest usage rate since he joined the Cavs, and in fact, his lowest in 6 years, going back to the bubble season when he was in Utah. And I brought that up. I use that as a little number because that's kind of true across the board for Donovan Mitchell this season. Like his minutes, his shot attempts, his touches, time of possession, usage rate, assist rate, true shooting, player efficiency rating, all these sorts of markers of his production and quality. They're all down a little bit. And that's somewhat by design because Kenny Atkinson is like, let's make sure we keep your pitch count low for when the playoffs come. And also, we're just so good that we don't need you to be shouldering such a huge load during the regular season. But him taking a step back means his numbers are down, but it also means the Cavs has helped like make space for the Cavs to be awesome, which we've talked about a couple of times on this show. And so you wind up with a team that's going to win maybe 70 games or get close to 70 wins and maybe isn't going to have a representative in the top five. I bring this up to say, what do you make of the Donovan Mitchell candidacy? What do you make of the Cavs in general? Should Donovan Mitchell even be the candidate for the Cavs? Like that's a question I'm having a hard time wrapping my brain around.
Yeah, I think we're trying to give Donovan Mitchell the MVP votes, because how do you not give MVP votes to anyone on this team that's going to win about 70 games this year? We've never really seen a team this good without a clear, unquestioned leader, like alpha on the team. And yes, Donovan Mitchell, by the book, is that guy. He's number six in the NBA in clutch scoring per minute. Jason Tatum is 34th. Okay. He's shooting 17% on threes in clutch situations, final 5 minutes, game within five. Donovan Mitchell has been awesome in late and close situations. Same with Darius Garland. And the reason why the Cavs are so great in crunch time, there are just so many great offensive players on that team that can do multiple things that I don't know how you guard them in late and close situations. Kenny Atkinson doing a great job with cutting and motion, and they just have so many live actions or live triple threats out there offensively with Evan Mobley and Darius Garland, et cetera, et cetera. So for me, Darius Garland is probably also eating into Donovan Mitchell's case in the same way that
they get each other.
Right. It's just they kind of, they cannibalize their MVP odds, is that they're so good. They got so many good teammates. Same reason why Jason Tatum, I think with the Boston Celtics, they've got so much depth on that team. You can't just point to Jason Tatum and be like, that's the reason why they're so good. When he steps off the floor, they're still amazing. Same thing with Donovan Mitchell, is when he steps off the floor, the Cavs are still juggernauts. And it's because they have such depth and such good offense, such great, both two-way play, that I think they're almost hurt by the quality of their teammates in ways that I think Giannis is so good and so talented, but they don't have anybody else who does anything remotely close to what Giannis does on that roster, and it shows when he's off the floor. So Donovan Mitchell and Jason Tatum are two peas in a pod when it comes to their teammates are almost too good to call them the MVP of the league, and that's why they're so good, and that's why we love them for the title odds and title contenders. And it also means we don't have to give them the number one guy on MVP votes. It just means they've got a great team, great teammates, and ultimately that's what we're playing for, is wins at the end of the day.
I love, we wind up tying ourselves in pretzels at this time of year. Unintentionally, unnecessarily, surely, but because that point is the same, you could graft that argument, pick it up wholesale, and put it onto Jokic versus SGA. And it's the reason why SGA doesn't get the nod from people who are like, yeah, you take SGA off the Thunder, they're still incredible. And there's all these other guys, like, yeah, they're not all NBA players, but the 1 through 15 talent is just so much bigger. The gap is so much bigger between there and with Jokic and the Nuggets. Whereas if you take Jokic out of that, the entire ecosystem dies. But like, you can have a voter say SGA is my MVP because of X, Y, and Z reasons, and then make a counter argument that runs counter to what they were saying. Like, I don't know. We all wind up losing our minds at this point. And I think that's just interesting and fascinating.
SGA, the thing on that though, is that he's so much better in plus minus or on court, off court stuff than anybody on the Thunder roster. So it's like, even though the Thunder are so good, even without him, They're reaching heights that no other team is reaching when SGA is on the floor. I don't know. We did a whole big number on his plus minus this season, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, and I think the gap is still absurd. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, in terms of, when he's on the floor, the Thunder are outscoring opponents. I'm going to pull it up here. Plus 791, and the number two team or number two player in the NBA is not at 700 or 600. It's plus 516, which is Evan Mobley with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And that's not everything, but the fact is that Lu Dort is second on the Thunder with a plus 458, which means that Shea Gilgeous-Alexander has a plus 340 point lead on the next highest guy on the Thunder. I think, to me, like, when you're doing MVP, it's just like, How many blind spots do you have on your resume, or how many blemishes do you have on your resume? Because all of these guys are unbelievably talented. It's just, man, Giannis just checks off more boxes to me than Jason Tatum and Donovan Mitchell. Who's next?
Putting a button on Mitchell. when you look at Basketball Reference's MVP award tracker, which is kind of like a projection model based on what previous voting results have borne out, there are three Cavs in the top 10 and none of them are Donovan Mitchell. So just, it's interesting to me, like, yeah, it's Mobley at six, Jared Allen at seven, and Darius Garland at 10. So yeah, hard to be able to figure. Our third little number is 30. Nice round number. That's how many points per game Anthony Edwards is averaging over his last 25 games. That is second most in the NBA behind Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in that span. He's also putting up 5.8 rebounds and 5.1 assists per game in that span on 601 true shooting. 35-5 on 600 true shooting is extremely rare air. Here's the names, and I don't even have to say full names for most of these guys that have done this over the course of a full season. Michael, Giannis, Harden, SGA, Luka, Steph, LeBron, Embiid, KD. That's it. That's the guys that have done this for a full season. Now, 25 games, according to my math, is not a full season, but that's the level Anthony Edwards has been performing at for the past couple of months. The Wolves have had a top five offense over the last couple of months in that, in large part because of what he's been able to do as a shot creator and shot maker. That has allowed them to stay in the race for a top six spot in the West, despite the Lakers adding Luka, Jimmy going to the Warriors, the Nuggets continuing to be on their run as Jamal Murray heated up, the Rockets and Grizzlies not going anywhere, the power at the top of the West. They've been right there in large part because of what Ant's been doing on the offensive end. So we've talked about the Wolves as a potential sleeper, positive point differential against top 10 opponents, the problem that their defense can seem to give teams like the Nuggets, the level they can get to with Rudy Gobert back there. And as like the final boss offensive monster is part of that calculation. So where do you slot Anthony Edwards into this conversation?
If this was like second half of the season MVP, he might be three or top three, but we don't have that, right? So this is for the full season. And unfortunately for Anthony Edwards, they got off to a slow start. The integration of Julius Randle and Dante DiVincenzo has really kicked into high gear lately.
Yes.
But again, this is a full season award. And unfortunately for Ant, it just didn't click until a few months into the season. And man, it has a click. He's averaging in the month of March about 30 points a game, like you mentioned, but also just two turnovers a game. His assist-to-turnover ratio has been widening all season long, and that's what you want to see. Like, when they double him, remember, he hated to be doubled. Like, he just did not like that and has expressed that in very loud terms, that it's not fun to have to deal with that. And yet, I think he's starting to trust his teammates more, and he's trying to make the smart play rather than the flashy play or try to do it all by himself. So, averaging 30 points on just, like, two turnovers a game with, I think, like, four or five assists a game too, is really impressive. Keeping those mistakes down to a minimum, maybe not Jimmy Butler, adult diapers levels of keeping mistakes down, but Anthony Edwards for sure doing a great job of improving not just his scoring and his ability to get buckets and his postseason quotes. All of that has been in high gear all season, but the playmaking especially has been on point lately.
Yeah, and the level of confidence that shows in guys like Jaden McDaniels, in guys like Dante DiVincenzo, Julius Randle, sort of bringing everybody along with them, the energy that he infuses into the young guys getting in there, Nikhil Alexander, Walker, Jalen Clark has been, there's been so many guys that have like risen their level, and I think Ant has been a part of that. Speaking of bringing people along with you, a captain does that. Our fourth little number, 7.53. That is the win probability added score for one Jalen Brunson, according to Mike Bowie's numbers at Inpredictable. Shouts out to Mike, long and indispensable resource for win probability stuff. So WPA, win probability added, it's a stat that aims to measure how a player's contribution adds to or subtracts from their team's chances of winning. And there's a lot of math that goes into it, but this particular flavor of it deliberately, and I'm going to quote from his site so I don't get it wrong, deliberately allocates more credit to a player for clutch shots and penalizes them more for failing to come through when the game is on the line. Brunson's score, 7.53, is, guess what, third in the NBA behind, guess who, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Nikola Jokic. Brunson trails the top candidates in most advanced metrics. Like, in fact, you mentioned that Basketball Reference MVP tracker. Cat shows up on there. Brunson does not. So, like, I don't imagine he's actually going to get particularly high up here. But It's worth noting the Knicks are a 3 seed in the East, partly because they've been so good in the clutch, third in the NBA in clutch winning percentage. And that's like almost entirely Brunson valuing possessions, getting good possessions, or making a tough shot out of a bad possession. And we've seen now that he's been injured the last couple of weeks with that ankle sprain, just how rough it is for New York getting into their offense without him. So Jalen Brunson, number 11 in your program, number 3 in win probability added, number 3 on your MVP ballot?
That's pretty good. I love that stat. It's really fun to look at. It's a totally non-box score stat. And so thinking about how clutch a guy is and what that's worth, it's not a perfect metric, but I think it gets a lot closer to the answer of who's raising your chances of winning a game every single night. And Jalen Brunson has come up huge with not just shot making, but not turning the ball over. And yes, so that is... it's huge. It's huge to have a guy that you can depend on in late game situations. Depend, kind of like Jimmy Butler, adult diapers. All right, Jalen Brunson. The thing here, though, can he get to the 65 game threshold, Dan?
Yeah.
He's got, what, 59 games?
That's
and
right.
He needs to hit 65. And depending on this ankle injury, there's a couple of guys, including Giannis, where it's like, I would vote for this guy even if he doesn't get to 65, but because there is a 65 game rule where Giannis Antetokounmpo played a 19 minute game. And so he's actually played what, 55 games by that metric. But because the play-in final does count towards your totals at the end of the season, he makes that game up. It's crazy, like how this 65 game rule makes you have to get out like a tax code book to figure out if a game qualifies or not. That the final at the NBA Cup doesn't count to your stats, but it does count to your game's total for MVP. But if you get hurt in a game and you have to leave with only 19 minutes played, it might not count to your total. So Giannis has still got some work to do. I think if he misses more than 6 games here down the stretch, he's going to be disqualified from this conversation entirely. They've got a couple back-to-back games coming up, so we'll see. Doc Rivers has always been a proponent of, hey, let's make sure you're healthy for June, not April. Like, they want to make sure he's healthy for the postseason run. And speaking of postseason run, when we come back after the break, we're going to talk about the Milwaukee Bucks. And that game against the Golden State Warriors, I do think was 1 out of 82, but I do think it was emblematic of some of the warts that this team has, not just against the Golden State Warriors and Jimmy Butler and Draymond Green, but against a lot of other good teams. So we'll talk about that right after this. All right, now the moment everyone's been waiting for, Dan, the update to the scoreboard, the over-under scoreboard. We set like 30 over-unders this season, and Dan, I got the scoreboard updated, and it is still a tie, 17-17. Yeah, there's going to be some tipping points here between, of course, Zach Edey and his foul rates, fouls per 36.
Everybody's
and
talking
Isaiah
about
Hartenstein's,
it.
Yeah, Isaiah Hartenstein's three-point rate per 36 minutes.
The big two, the main topics in the league, r/NBA.
Everyone's dialed in.
It's the heat that everybody's focusing on.
We're going to find out after this recording. Everything's going to shift. But at this point, 17-17. So we'll see. It could be a blowout just if those two things go a certain way. Dan, one thing was a blowout, and then it kind of got close, and then it was another big loss for the Milwaukee Bucks. On Tuesday night, no blowout for Mr. Jimmy Buckets, okay? Everything was contained and no issues there for Jimmy Butler.
I'm a child.
How many references am I going to do?
I'm taking
big number,
the over.
5 references, yeah, on adult diapers.
I'm taking the over. I'm such a child. It makes me happy every time you do it. Sorry. Continue. Keep going.
This team, the Milwaukee Bucks, right now, after this loss to the Warriors, they're 0-4 to the Cleveland Cavaliers. They're 0-3 to the Boston Celtics. They're 0-2 against the New York Knicks. They're also 0-2 against the Oklahoma City Thunder. 0-2 against the Warriors. That's right. Not a win against any of those teams that I just said. They're 0-9 against the 3 best teams in the NBA, OKC, Boston, and Cleveland. And the top 3 seeds, Milwaukee, is 2-12. And that's not even counting the Golden State Warriors. So Milwaukee can't seem to beat any title contender this season. And it raises the question, Is this another one and done? Milwaukee Bucks did not get out of the first round last year, Giannis being hurt. And then in the first year with Doc, did not get out of the first round. This team hasn't, they've won one series since the championship. One series getting out of the first round. That's not a good resume over the last 3 years for the Milwaukee Bucks and Giannis Antetokounmpo. And I'm not saying this is all on Giannis, but watching them down the stretch against the Golden State Warriors, it just solidified a lot of the concerns that I have about their crunch time offense, which has been abysmal this season. Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo should be better than the way that they are in offense. Their two-man game has not improved since Doc Rivers took over. It's as bad as it's ever been. Giannis cannot screen for Damian Lillard, cannot lay a body or touch anyone that Damian Lillard has on his back. He had a screen against the Golden State Warriors where he was almost screening the sideline. Like he was trying to set a screen for Damian Lillard, but didn't give Damian Lillard any room to go around without stepping out of bounds. And it's just like, have you guys not drilled pick and roll offense? Have you guys not run the same action over and over to try to get some chemistry? And in that game, Dan, they went small for like one of the only stretches since they acquired Kyle Kuzma. They had Giannis at the five. They put Brook Lopez on the bench. And it was abysmal. They scored 2 points on 8 possessions in crunch time. Yes, that is a 25 offensive rating with that small ball, quote unquote, small ball lineup with Dame, Gary Trent Jr., Torian Prince, Giannis, and Kyle Kuzma at the four. It's got to be better. And it falls on Doc Rivers. And guess what? Doc Rivers, according to Chris Haynes on his latest Haynes brief, Dan, says that Doc Rivers called a meeting, a little kumbaya, a little huddle up. Let's get some Ubuntu together between Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo to kind of get on the same page about the offense. And he used the word dire, I believe, Chris Haynes, about the situation going forward with the Milwaukee Bucks. So the offense has been abysmal. It should be better with Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo. They've only gone small very sparingly with Kuz and Giannis at the five. It seems like they are not actually on the same page at all when it comes to playing at the highest levels with the big teams in the league.
Yeah, you mentioned the dire state of their crunch time offense. It's the worst in the NBA, like statistically, worst offensive rating in the NBA in the clutch. According to NBA.com, they're bailed out in those situations. In fact, they have the best crunch time defense in the NBA. So they are the absolute polar opposites, 30th and first. It's an interesting point to say, like, they finally kind of flipped the switch and said, let's go smaller. Let's go Giannis at the five, which has been kind of like the, in case of emergency, break glass for the Bucks in different matchups for years. Playing that way requires two-way players that can both space the floor and be a threat to shoot and defend a point of attack and be, you know, active, switchable, like hold up defenders. And this iteration of the Bucks really doesn't have that, right? Like you can say, I would like to see, to goose the offense there, give me like, I don't know, AJ Green in for Torian Prince or like something like that, right? Like more shooting to space the floor. But then does that, you know, expose you more on the defensive end? Does Doc not feel comfortable going that small without another kind of combo forward to pair with Kuzma there? Is Kuzma good enough offensively to be able to be that like stretch four, playmaking four in that kind of lineup? I think there's reason to be skeptical about that. And you see just over time, like it's the bit by bit stripping away of parts of your identity, right? Like Jrue Holiday, Bucks fans will tell you what the problems were with Jrue Holiday and that you would get into playoff series, you'd get into major games, and you just could not rely on him to knock down shots. But he was somebody you felt reasonably good or very good about in a lot of those lineups. Chris Middleton, injuries were always an issue, but no one has ever made Giannis feel more comfortable in those crunch time situations. You come screen, I got the ball, we've got like 11 years of reps together. We know what this is all going to be. Even a year and a half with Dame, it's not the same. And move on. Like Pat Connaughton just isn't what he used to be, but he used to be that kind of guy that was, you could fit into those two-way lineups. there just isn't enough of it. You're robbing Peter to pay Paul with all of it. And then you feel yep. you wind up feeling like it's like you're trying to plug one hole in a dam and then a leak springs over here. And Doc Rivers and the rest of that Bucks lineup, they're just constantly kind of trying to plug leaks and everybody winds up all wet.
I mean, who knew that Brooke Lopez would be this important to a Bucks team in 2025? Like Doc actually at the end of the game on Tuesday night called for Brooke Lopez to check into the game with like a minute left or a minute 30 once he realized that this was getting nowhere, this small ball lineup against the Warriors. And at a certain point, the game was so out of hand that he just like called Brooke Lopez back like, you know what? It's over. It's too late for me to make this change. And that's the problem with Doc. You know, Doc Rivers is notoriously slow to make any sort of adjustments, make any sort of change or reaction to what he's seeing on the floor. And it might be too little too late for these the Milwaukee Bucks. And by the way, I'm not trying to absolve Damian Lillard of any sort of blame here. You look at some of the defensive mistakes down the stretch. He left Brandon Podziemski wide open for two threes, just lost him, completely lost Pods. And that was the game. Defensively, if they just get those stops in those minutes and don't give up 6 points to Pods there, it is still a one or two possession game, even with the atrocity of that offense. It's just, look, Damian Lillard has his weaknesses defensively. We know that. It's the upside offensively and unlocking Giannis and just kind of raising the ceiling offensively is why they made that deal, sending away Drew Holiday to get Damian Lillard. But it's like, yo, if you don't have Brooke Lopez out there, Giannis can't cover for all of those mistakes. They're so top heavy. The roster just does not work. A Kyle Kuzma trade I was out on to begin with, and it's going to take some time to gel, but you look at the state of Chris Middleton this season, how he could barely move. The offensive rating of that three-man lineup, Dame, Chris Middleton, and Giannis, when they're on the floor, it was 120. The offensive rating was 120 with Chris Middleton barely able to walk. With Kyle Kuzma, it's down from 120 to 114. He's not a three-point spacer, has not been a great playmaker, and hopefully when they double Dame or double Giannis, maybe when Kyle Kuzma's got 4-on-3, he can create more offense. But, man, it is not pretty for the Milwaukee Bucks, and it's just a dire situation going into the postseason for sure. If you look at if they face Boston, if they face Cleveland, I could see a sweep for sure of this Milwaukee Bucks team. And Giannis, dude, he airballed a mid-range jumper on Tuesday night, airballed a free throw on Tuesday night. The confidence on that jumper doesn't seem great right now. And I think Giannis is going to be hack-a-shacked. And I know they've kind of legislated that out of the game a little bit, but I could see with a lot of the insecurities of this team, it might be getting to Giannis where this they're just going to foul him and hope that he just gets the yips at the free throw line when he takes 17 minutes to take a free throw. But it's one game, but still when you've got that kind of win-loss record against the best teams, it does raise some alarms.
Few more, I guess they're not even little numbers at this point. They're like minuscule numbers, teeny tiny numbers before we were able to get out of here. You mentioned the whole gambit with the Dame pairing with Giannis was the offense needs to be so overwhelming that whatever defensive issues don't matter. The Bucks last year, sixth in offensive efficiency, according to Cleaning the Glass. So far this year, 14th. Just can't be good enough. And then when you talked about the struggles against those elite teams, even if you just go out to good teams, Bucks are 11-18 against teams with 500 or better records. They're 5-15 against teams with top 10 point differentials. They're getting blown out in a lot of these games. And then projection models, your mileage may vary in terms of what they'll tell you, but in terms of their chances to win the title, Dunks and Threes has them just under 4%. ESPN's BPI has them at 0.2%. And Basketball Reference has them at 0.1% of winning at all. So you're basically drawn dead. And what you're hoping for is, can Giannis just be the best player in every game, in every series that he's in? And we've seen crazier things happen. We've seen him do that. He is that level of great. But that is an awfully steep hill to climb with the surrounding talent and with the top of the East looking as good as it does. So it's going to be a difficult set of circumstances for them no matter what. And yeah, a game like the loss to the Warriors certainly underscores some of those concerns.
Well, we might be getting a rematch, first round rematch between Indiana and Milwaukee as it stands right now. And based on their transition defense and the way they look the opposite of locked in, I'd be tempted to take the Indiana Pacers in a first round series between Indiana and
even
Milwaukee.
Even with Giannis? I mean, like last year they didn't have Giannis. Even with Giannis,
the crunch time, the decision making, the little attention to detail in the postseason, I just feel like if they lose game one or game, go down 0-2 for whatever reason, I could see this going south very quickly for the Milwaukee Bucks. So we'll see. There's still a couple more weeks left in the season, but right now I have very little faith in the Milwaukee Bucks. On my title, Tom's title tiers that I do every week on TomTheFinder.com, you can see I'm not very enthused with the Milwaukee Bucks title chances the last few months. And we're seeing why. They need a couple big wins here down the stretch for me to believe in them again. And to wrap things up, I think it would go a long way if they finish strong in his MVP case. Obviously, if they make some inroads in the standings and have some big wins down the stretch, it'll calm the indigestion that I'm having about the Milwaukee Bucks at the big time stage. And it'll also help his MVP case. Right, Dan?
Absolutely.
That's it for the big number this week. I think we hit the over-under on adult diaper mentions.
Let's get a couple more in there. That's fine by me.
Yeah, if you're feeling like, what are you talking about? Listen to last week. I promise you, you will not be disappointed. Yes. So thank you to Mike Goldfarb Stone and Emmy behind the scenes for making this podcast what it is. And thank you for watching on YouTube. Also, don't forget about those brackets. Make sure you kick the living daylights out of me and Dan on those brackets at Yahoo Sports and Jimmer. Can't believe it. We got Jimmer on the squad. So check that out, as well as make sure you get those 5-star reviews and leave a comment. Much appreciated, and go tell your friends. Enjoy the March Madness, and I hope that Giannis Antetokounmpo and Damian Lillard, after that meeting, kind of sort some things out, because I would like to see Giannis at the top, playing really good basketball at the end. Dan, have a great weekend, bud.
You too. No dire times here on the big number. We'll see you next week, everybody.